I'm Marilyn McCarney. Betsy Payette and I are interviewing personnel who were instrumental in developing Renfrew Museum and Park. Today is March 27, 1992, and Reverend Willard Ron is being interviewed. He was appointed to the board to replace H. Roland Weaver in 1978. He's in his third term in office with 12 years of service. His current term expires November 1, 1992. He's also a member of the Institute Board, and that term expires January 1, 1995.
I'm Willard Ron. I'm the on the board at Renfrew. I moved to Waynesboro about in March of 1975, and we bought a house in Waynesboro that was owned by the Good family, and we were very satisfied with our home and still are. However, as we traveled around, I remember when we went to drove by Renfrew, we had no idea what it was. It just looked like a real nice farm, you know, and we oohed and aahed and said, boy, wouldn't that be a nice place to live? And it didn't take long for us to find out that it was not for sale or anything like that. And we finally found out that it was part of the borough property and was going to be a museum. When I became a member of the board, I think when there was quite a bit of emphasis on the park, because Renfrew has 107 acres of park, I knew Ed Miller, and Ed came to me one day and said that the Renfrew board was looking for somebody that had some background on nature and park, and I was very active on the Appalachian Trail and still am in terms of maintaining the Appalachian Trail. And with those kinds of backgrounds, I was appointed by the borough to serve as a member of the Renfrew board, which I was very happy about and still am, and hope I can continue on the board for a while yet. I came on the board when Chester Adams was the chairman of the board. Pat Bresler was on the board also at that time. I forget who other people were on the board. After Chester Adams died, the board met, and I was totally surprised to become the chairman of the board. I think Leroy Maxwell, since he was a vice president and probably should have been the president of the board, nominated me or made a motion that I be the chairman, and it went through, and Leroy Maxwell remained the vice president of the board. I think probably I've always thought, and still do, that he should have followed Chester Adams. I think probably one of the things that, first thing I remember on the board that had some impact and probably a little bit more controversy was when the board tried to get rid of some things that were not part of the period, the American Federal period, which dates from about 1790 to 1830 or something like that. Mrs. Nicodemus had a lot of dishes. There were farm implements, not large implements, but farm items that we needed to get rid of. We just couldn't continue to hold on to some of the things. We had to make room for things, and we were crowded for space in the in the attic of the museum. This was before we had the facility that's the that houses the antiques in the barn above the visitor center. There is a facility that houses all of our furniture. Before we had that, we were very crowded, and the Renfrew board thought it would be a good idea to get rid of some of the dishes and some of the farm things that we had. And I remember the borough, the councilman, with probably some criticism or some outside people that felt that whatever Mrs. Nicodemus had, we should keep. So I remember one time coming out here and explaining to the councilman the items that we wanted to sell, and I think probably in my that was one of the first experiences I had on the board that were a decision had to be made between with the council, and the items did not go on sale as was planned. As far as I know, the items which we originally had planned on selling or go up for sale, as far as I know, those items are still here. For example, when we have open house at Christmas time, some of the dishes that Mrs. Nicodemus had, we use for that occasion. They're very lovely things, but they're not from that period, and that for that reason the board felt that we just cannot accumulate, or we have to make room for what we have since we have a limited space. So as far as I know, those items are still here. As to where they all are, I could not do that. Tell you that. That would be something I'm sure that either Ed Miller or Jamie could tell you. At the time that I, when I came on the board, the curator of the museum, oh, his name slips me right now.
Jim Koenig.
Yes, Jim Koenig. Thank you. Jim Koenig, who was a person that was very well-versed in the American Federal period, and whose emphasis, as far as the museum and the park was concerned, was with the museum. Adding things to the museum. He was great on pottery, and so there was a great emphasis in the beginning of when I came on the board, a lot of emphasis on the decorative arts and the emphasis on the fact that we have the largest private collection of John Bell pottery. So there was more emphasis on that aspect of the museum. Since Mr. Koenig's emphasis was the museum and the collection, Mr. Koenig was very concerned about how we would present the museum to the public. And he was one who was very thorough in training the guides, and I remember in the beginning of my time on the board, I became a guide, and I remember we had workshops explaining to us the features of items, and so there was a good emphasis on the museum. He was also a very talented person in terms of construction. The museum cases which we have out here that display the John Bell pottery were all made by Jim Koenig. We would have paid, you know, much, much more money for those items if we had had them done on the outside, but Jim had that talent and did that. So when Jim Koenig left, it was, I remember Letitia, I can't tell you what she worked here. I guess she was here when Jim Koenig was here. I could be corrected on that. But after Jim Koenig left, the board, of course, had to replace the curator, and I, along with Leroy Maxwell and a couple other board members, served as a committee for securing a curator. Of course, everything we did was with the whole board. Of course, the final outcome was the employment of James Smith, who is a present curator. He came up from Florida. I remember reading his dossier and other dossiers. We interviewed a couple different people for this position, and we liked the dossier that James Smith submitted, and then I think we had one or two interviews with him here on the premises, and final selection was, of course, Mr. Smith. I think the board had Mr. Smith as the curator. The board's had a different sort of a different emphasis with taking into consideration the park and the museum. And when Jamie came here, as I said, there was a different emphasis. It wasn't that the museum was thought less of by any means. But Jamie, as we like to call him, looked at the whole museum and park as a whole unit, and with the possibility of the restoration of the buildings. I remember as we were getting into the museum and all the outbuildings and all this, I told Jamie that I wish I could add another 50 years to my life, because I look for the possibility of Waynesboro as being sort of like a little Williamsburg. My wife and I have, my wife Virginia, who is a guide, and I have, her sister-in-law lives near Allentown, and every year we go to Allentown in August, primarily to see what we call, well, what they call the Goshenhofen Festival, which is a weekend of visiting a facility similar to this, where everything that was done in the old days was done. They start off with a live hog standing on the ground. They show, you see them kill the hog, gut the hog, hang the hog, take the hair off. In fact, the whole process happens in that single day in which you see, you know, it butchered, the head cheese, the pudding, and all of that made, and you can, you know, even sample it. Every you know, all kinds of sewing things, women things, how buttons were made. You can even sit down at a table and make a couple buttons yourself. All kinds of farm machinery that was a threshing machine that has two horses walking on a treadle, which moves the wheel that turns the belt of the thrasher, and then you see the grain fall to the ground, and then it's picked up with a shovel and put in a bin. And so I've always encouraged the Renfrew board and guides that ought to be an event that someone goes to, because those are the kinds of things that we're attempting to do here now, but on a much, much smaller scale. I'll bet you they have 10,000 people that come there on a Friday and Saturday. They don't do it on Sunday because it's a religious day. But I sort of envision, you know, that, you know, like 50 years from now, we're going to be closer to that idea, which is the emphasis that Jamie has brought to this place. Now we make butter. For one thing, we're making clothing with growing flax. We grow it right here on the property. All of this emphasis is what I see a very good thing for Renfrew, and much, much greater possibilities exist with the whole farmstead idea than just having a museum here. The museum is fine and everything, but the emphasis that we have with the whole farmstead, in my view, is the right direction for Renfrew. That whole idea and concept brings into it a lot more volunteer, a lot of other people that otherwise would not even know about Renfrew, but they bring their own skills here, and people even find they're interested in some of these things, and they come to the workshops. And well, it's an exciting thing, and I'm glad the direction that we're going. With the emphasis of the farmstead in conjunction with the museum, and a lot more people involved, I remember Jim Koenig said that we were making plans for the number of people that were visiting Renfrew, and I remember by about 1985, Jim Koenig thought that we would have as many as 10,000 visitors to Renfrew. I'm sure that figure is probably doubled because of the emphasis that the park has brought in terms of natural things. Melody Stewart, who is very much a part of the Institute, which I haven't even spoken about yet, Melody Stewart and I were back in the early 80s, led hikes on the Appalachian Trail for a week or on different trails. And with my work at Renfrew, I tried to emphasize to Melody the importance of that Renfrew brought to the natural aspect. And she was interested in that and started taking some classes from local universities on that subject. And so when we started the educational system here, which we do more with children and youth, in what we call the Renfrew Institute for Cultural, and I forget what the long name is, but it's the Institute. Melody became, of course, a very much a part of it and is probably the key person in the educational aspects of the Institute. The Institute probably started because certainly of the leadership of Jamie, but also the necessity arose because the budget of Renfrew is most of what we do in terms of budget is already consumed in what we have here, so that when we started having classes for young people, we were using the Renfrew budget, which was limited, very much limited. So in order to secure more funds, it was the Institute rose out of that necessity. And so now not only do we have a Renfrew Museum and Park, but we also have an Institute which is a part of the Renfrew Board, but in a sense is separate in terms of budget. And we have been overwhelmed with the response that the community and commercial and private individuals have given to the Institute. The fact that we've involved, I have no idea how many people are involved in Renfrew on a volunteer basis, but all of that is key to our success here as a museum, is we've just gotten a lot of people to work with us, and not only do they work with us, but they also support us financially in a great way. I forget the numbers, but I know just in the last board meeting there were something like more than 3,000 children. 3,000 children are going to be here this spring. Can't talk about Melody now because she's here. As I'm talking, I keep thinking, you know, of other things that have happened. I shall never forget, as I'm sure a lot of other people in the community will not forget, that the raising of the Fahnestock barn. I remember when Koenig was the curator. I remember Jim Koenig, because of his emphasis on the museum, said the Fahnestock barn was worthless, it was falling apart, and about the only way to have it happen would be to someday just go out there and get a couple cables and bring it down. Well, when Jamie came, there was a different, Jamie saw great possibilities with the barn. And so after much thought, and after the board looked at the fact that we needed some money to do some renovation of different places at Renfrew, we needed to raise some money. So I think the board, in their initial response to this need, figured that maybe we could raise about $90,000 to do what we needed to do. When it was all over, I think we raised about $210,000. Much of that money going into the barn. And somewhere along the line, Terry Pelton came along, and he worked at one of the Landis companies in Waynesboro here. I think it was the machine company. And with his getting some interest in tools, became interested in what we were doing out here. And when the Fawnstock barn was taken down, we employed him on our staff to help us in the renovation of the barn, which meant that everything that was standing had to be removed and taken down with care. And then everything had to be replaced with new stuff. So instead of going to a lumber company and asking for beams and everything, Terry Pelton took upon himself to learn the ways of hewing logs. So with the permission of the Waynesboro Borough, we went up into the mountains on the Waynesboro property. And when I say we, I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking about Terry Pelton and other borough people in the know, who marked certain trees and said, we are going to have these cut and these will be hewed. So everything that's in the barn was hand-hewed with an axe that Terry Pelton used with his own power to shape and to put it all together. I remember I can still see it, how that day in which we raised the barn. We didn't do it all in one day by any means, but it was real exciting to be a part of that, to lift the logs and, well, it's all on video and it can be seen, and it's a beautiful thing. I'll never forget that. I forgot to tell you that when I came on the board, where we're meeting here right now, was a barn, and the barn here. I remember when I came here of walking in the barn. There were no animals in here at the time. I could see the hanging on the wall were the leather harnesses and you know, whatever farm implement, you know, hand tools that were on the walls. There was still straw. I didn't smell very much, or I don't remember if I smelled any manure or not. Probably not. It all disappeared in the. But the barn was here, and since Renfrew was growing, and there was the necessity for. The barn to be utilized. And so the concept of a visitor center was a consideration that the Renfrew board took into account. And I believe the first name escapes me, but Arthur Ruth, there was a Ruth estate. I believe it was a Ruth estate that contributed a good sum of money to the Renfrew board to be used, you know, just for whatever they wanted. It seemed like this money came to Renfrew board at the time that we were considering how are we going to utilize this space in the barn? since the emphasis was on more of the decorative arts aspect. And of course, the barn is not a part of the American Federal period, this barn, where we are right now. So there was, I believe the Ruth Estate funds were the primary funds for this facility that we call the Visitor Center, which is in the large barn. We had a lot of limitations here because of the possibility of fire and so forth. So above us is a large area of vacant space with a roof over it, and where we have a few items that are stored, but that's where the Renfrew collection is in the facility above us here. Back in the beginning, when Ed Miller got in touch with me, I came to Renfrew Park here because it was a nice place to walk around. I needed a place where I could come with my binoculars and power scope and look for natural things, especially birds, because I'm a bird watcher. And Renfrew offered that, and so since the facility is here and the trails were here, I started my own walks with on the trails to look for whatever birds I could find. After a couple years of doing this to myself, I don't know how it started or anything, but I started leading bird walks, and so every Saturday of April and May, beginning at 7 o'clock in the morning, I've been doing bird walks. These have been advertised in Chambersburg and Hagerstown newspapers, and every year we get people from those areas that come here and lead bird walks. And then I have some bird watching friends that I've invited from time to time, who know a lot more about birds than I do, to come and walk and have people meet them, and who speak with much more authority than I do. I was a bird watcher before I came here. My father-in-law got me started in birds back in the early 1950s, and I remember going with him one day for a bird walk, and he says, "There's a rufous-sided towhee," and I said, "Where?" He said, "Well, I don't know where it is." He said, "I just know that I heard it." I said, "Come on now, you can't tell me that you can tell a bird by the call." "Well," he says, "sure can." He says, "I even now hear white-throated sparrow." I says, "Prove it." So he took and showed me a white-throated sparrow. Well, to make a long story short, all birds can be identified by their calls. And now when I take walks, I hear all these birds, and I've got people that are skeptics about whether I'm hearing these birds or not. Renfrew has some trails that lead along the creek from the parking lot, where we meet anywhere from myself alone when the weather looks threatening to as many as 20 different people from Hagerstown, Chambersburg, Blue Ridge Summit, all over like a 10, 15, 25 mile radius that come here on Saturday mornings. I even forget how many I'm sure we've had about 130 different species of birds that we've identified here. When we don't see birds, of course, we look at the flowers, I remember seeing fox. I remember on three different occasions in three different years I've seen red fox, and on one occasion we came upon a fox den in which we saw three pups who were unaware that we were watching them, and we were behind the bushes, and everybody with their glasses. Dan Arthur was with us, and so during the week he snuck up on them and took a picture of the fox, of the young fox. I remember also watching, being on a bird walk, and saw a fox run across the field where Kenny Stauffer lives with a pheasant in its mouth. I've seen deer here at Renfrew. We've had every spring probably already out here is an osprey, which is probably next to the bald eagle and golden eagle, the best fishermen that we have. The hikes that I conduct are, as I say, on Saturday morning, and this year we're going to be taking not only bird walks, but after the bird walk there will be a couple flower walks in which we will actually work with a book and helping people how to identify a flower using a guide in a book. If you tell, and this is from my own personal experience, if you tell a person what a flower is, when they come back next week, they'll say, I remember you told me that last week, but I don't remember what it is. If you can actually work through the book in identifying it and finding out that it's a flower that the leaves are alternate or they're opposite, which is different, what kind of leaves there are, and different aspects of a flower and a plant, you'll remember it a lot better than if somebody just tells you what it is. Because there's so many flowers to remember. Melody Stewart has done extensive work in the flower collection here, and made some pretty slides of what we have available. Truman Doyle, who is a retired man in Hagerstown and a personal friend of mine, who is knows more about birds and flowers than I do. I had him come out here one day with me and take a walk at Renfrew, and after that he says, you know, you have one of the finest flower collections around here, he said. Explore that as much as you can. So on a subsequent visit after that, I asked him if he would lead a bird walk, which he has. He's an ancient man in terms of age right now, and I've invited him out again, but he says he's too old to do it anymore. Charlie Brightbill, who is a very well-known bird watcher in the Mercersburg area, and who is has been employed by the state at Cowan's Gap to lead nature hikes and so forth, has been here on the leading bird walks as well. We've got great horned owls nesting again this year. We've had them for about 4 or 5 years nesting on the property, raising a couple young fledglings. Oh yeah, great blue herons. And a lot of little birds too. As I'm talking, of course, I remember a lot of things that I'm not saying, and some things that, other things that need to be said. I do want to say this about Leroy Maxwell, that a lot of people don't know this, and it's no secret to anybody, but actually our budget includes an item to the rent to the borough of Waynesboro. We pay for the services of Lloyd Hamburger, for the whatever services we get from the borough, we pay for those. And there's a good item in the budget always every year about monies that we pay to the borough as just because we're part of the pie. We're a piece of the pie, just like the streets and the police and all that is piece of the pie. One of the things that, and what I want to say is Leroy Maxwell has been a force in keeping that item down more than anybody on the board. And going back to where we're talking about the park and so forth, we have had all the time that Jamie was here, and maybe Jim Koenig too, we've at times had students from the university close by who have come here to work as an intern and so forth. And of course, I think that's how Will Shepherd got started here at Renfrew, was as a student, and it turned out that his interest in archaeology and so forth has proved very, very beneficial to us. I know that when we used to go on the bird walks, just below the Fahnestock house was a rubbish pile. And, you know, I'm sure even up until 1985 or in the 80s or something like that, trash could have been thrown there or piled up there. But the trash included old wire fence and everything that goes into trash. So I always looked at that as, you know, as a worthless and useless thing. But Will Shepherd found out that from tax records and so forth, that there's a mill there. Well, to make a long story short, Will, along with this, and with the support, of course, the Renfrew Board, and a local Cumberland Valley Archaeological Society or something like that name, started digging and found out that underneath all that trash and so forth was a grist mill, because there is, as you walk from along the stream, you can see that there's a depression there that looks like there might have been a raceway, which it was, and that water went over the wheels that turned the grit, that turned the mill, that ground the flour, that baked the bread. So under all that trash was really a treasure. And of course it's all excavated now, and Mr. Bucky being the chairman of the farmstead idea, there has been partial restoration of the mill. Will Shepherd says there were two 14-foot wheels there at one time, originally, and those wheels, of course, were fed with a raceway.
I envision someday that, you know, I'd like to see someone come to Waynesboro and say, "Why, I think this is a great place. I'd like to give you a contribution that you could build such a place, you know, restore the grist mill." So, you know, when I said in the beginning, I could envision that the Renfrew will be a little Williamsburg. I still think that's a very much a possibility with the restoration of some buildings. And it's interesting, since we've hired an artist to show what Renfrew might have looked like years ago, there has been an artist's drawing of some of the buildings that that already exist, and also some buildings that since have long passed. The park area, when you come into Renfrew Park from Welty Road, you come into the park and park your car in the parking lot, and right now you see a large can't get the word, a shelter which was not there originally, that was given by the Lions Club, which was probably as much to do with Ed Miller as the Lions Club, because he's part of the Lions Club. The Lions Club made a put up a pavilion for Renfrew use, which is used extensively. And then if you walk across a little walk bridge, which is a flow over run, you come into the picnic area. This picnic area is very limited, and it gets crowded in the summertime. So the Renfrew board thought, well, we need to start planning for another picnic area. So after some consideration, this I believe when Pat Brezer was still on the Renfrew board, we proposed that a future picnic area be up on the hill toward, as you're looking from the hog house, the pig house, whatever we want to call it, next to the barn, look up the hill toward the Summit View School. There's a hill up there, and right now you see trees, but originally there were no trees up there. So the Renfrew board said, well, maybe in 50 years there could be the need for another picnic area, and let's start planning for it now so that when it is needed, there will be some trees standing. So Renfrew, I think there's a couple hundred trees up there that have been planted, and this land, of course, was taken out of the farm land for the purpose of growing the trees and utilizing it someday for a picnic area. The need, of course, arose for better access to this, and so the Renfrew board approached the school, the Waynesboro school system, about the possibility of coming into the Renfrew property through the school property. The Summit View School has a large and extra large area between the school and Highway 16. And in the school utilization of that area, it's not used that much. And we thought maybe there could be access through the school let's see, that Second Street extension. Off of Second Street up into the Renfrew property. So I remember one day, one afternoon, Leroy Maxwell and Lloyd Hamburger and probably Pat Bresler and myself, some of the borough officials and school personnel, including one teacher who taught at Summit View. There was a feeling that that was a possibility, but I think probably that the teacher or felt that it would that property is really needed for the school and would not be right to have a road, an access road to the property. So that has been scrubbed, and that idea was scrubbed, and the trees are growing every day, and there may someday be a park up there. Since that time and now, we have a lot better relations, and it's not that we never did have any better relations, but seems like we have a better rapport with the school now, since we have, oh, I don't know how many hundreds of kids from the Waynesboro area that come to Renfrew. And so hopefully in some time in the future, there will be an access road from Second Street into the Renfrew property, utilizing that future area up on the hill. So I wanted to add that at the end here, because that's why the trees are up there, and I think that pretty much completes it.